You're listening to Tactical Startup, a podcast dedicated to building amazing businesses. I am your host, Taylor Darcy. In this podcast, we explore ways to innovate, improve, and level up your business through sales, marketing, automation, and business planning. Successful businesses pivot when times are bad and stay the course when times are good. We will have guests from different walks of life to help you see that success is not only possible, but even probable, no matter when or where you start. Through hard work and strategic planning, you can have the entrepreneurial life you've always dreamed. Tune in weekly to level up your business.
Today we have a guest, Kiele Pace. She is an attorney, a business coach, and we are very excited to have her on the podcast. She comes with many years of experience, and she is a true solo, so she knows what it's like to deal with limited mindsets and how to overcome them. And she is here to help share and help you level up your business, whatever it may be. And most importantly, as we talk about frequently on this podcast, about growing and being intentional about your business as opposed to letting whatever happens, happens. So here she is. All right, Kiele, tell me.
Hi there.
Hello. Tell me about yourself and for my listeners.
Right. So I am not just a criminal defense attorney, but a very narrow niche, do domestic assault defense. And actually, I do one correction. I was a solo for many years. And I would say probably for too many years. But I actually do have a team now. I am no longer, as of about sometime in 2017, maybe more like early 2018, I started removing myself from the courtroom. And I would say this was for the second time, what I call team building round two. And now I'm actually in the, I would say, enviable position that I am no longer the attorney in the trenches for my firm.
So how did you go from solo to team to business coach? What was the change there?
Well, it started about 5 years ago. I had always treated my practice, I guess the best way to look at it is I pretended to be freelance and kind of thought, well, there's no reason I can't just be a freelance attorney. I have clients, I have my work. And I really refused to view it as a business. And I thought that was working very well for me. But in hindsight, what I would say is that the reality was that I was making decisions by default that were restrictive, that were limiting, and that ultimately got me into just a really painful place. The better I did as an attorney, you know, I established a great reputation, getting fantastic results for my clients. The worse off I was when it came to quality of life, quality of work, and so forth. Work-life balance, I'm not even sure if that's a real thing, but it certainly the concept is worth exploring.
Right.
And it was terrible for me. I had started my practice in the first place with the idea that I wanted to have more flexibility, be able to spend more time with my kids when it counted. And instead I found myself in a place where I was the boss, but I was working most evenings, most weekends, and I couldn't win. I felt guilty when I was with my kids because I wasn't working. I felt guilty, you know, when it was in the reverse as well. So enter a family crisis. We had an illness in the family that set me back a significant amount. It was, you know, thankfully not my nuclear family, but still very important, difficult to cope with when I was already kind of behind and struggling to stay caught up. So that kind of put me in a position where I was like, I don't know how to deal with this now. You know, once I was kind of done with the family crisis and back into a place where I'm like, okay, I'm back to my desk full time, you know, and I've had to do multiple motions for continuance, case trial docket, so forth. That's when I really took a hard look and went, you know what, I don't know how to get caught up. I don't know how to deal with this problem. And that's when I sought professional assistance and began working with a business coach, or I should say a law practice management group that provided business coaching among other services.
Okay. And what specifically did they help you? I mean, what was their big, you know, there's always a big takeaway from what, whenever you're involving somebody else, because otherwise why pay them, right? So what right. was their, what was the big thing that was your catalyst from being that, with that, with the tragedy, with the issue that you're facing, to move forward and get caught up? And then how did you get from being, you know, behind to caught up to, you know, doing a very successful practice?
The biggest issue I had was the fear of hiring. I had, I would say, kind of late in the game, you know, started trying to figure out how to delegate, how to tackle that. However, rather than hiring a proper admin, my husband actually joined me and, you know, came into the law practice, and he's really sharp. He, I think, actually has you know, better skills for legal analysis, legal research, than many lawyers I know. But it turns out he's not necessarily a great admin. So in some ways that compounded the issue, you know. My right. first worry was, are we going to be able to cover his salary? Because previously he had been the primary breadwinner. And it turns out, yeah, that's not a problem when you've got someone answering your phones when you're in court.
Right.
Especially if it's someone who, you know, knows what he's talking about, knows, you know, how good you are and how much you care about your clients and so forth. But that was kind of the difficulty, the tricky thing that I had. So one of the biggest things that that group did for me was they taught me how to hire. They taught me how to delegate. They taught me the importance of, you know, like written policies and procedures. And basically technical business skills, the things that you need to know in order to run a business. And, you know, that was, it's interesting that that's true because, you know, of course, we all know that they don't teach you those skills in law school. But what a lot of people may not know is that they don't even teach skills in business school. You know, my undergraduate degree was actually business.
Right.
But, you know, that's really more for, you know, corporate. I have a management information systems degree, and you know, I was really groomed to be a project manager,
right.
you know, maybe a mid-level executive, that sort of thing. I learned about accounting and finance and so forth, but again, in a bigger company context. So that technical knowledge was huge. But there was a piece that at that point I didn't understand. And that was actually missing from that experience with that group. And that's the thing that kind of really led me to where I am now, that allowed me to really get to a place of success with my firm, and that ultimately led me to become a coach, and it's specifically a mindset coach. That's what I do, because the missing piece was mindset.
Right.
I got to a place after about a year where I was doing my best to follow the advice, very good advice that I was getting when it came to growing a business, running a business. But I could not figure out why I wasn't able to make further progress. Like, I got to a certain point and I was stuck. And so I spent a full year in a pretty painful position within that law practice management group as well, you know, because I didn't know what was wrong.
Right.
It certainly wasn't that I didn't care. It wasn't that I wasn't trying. I just really didn't. Unfortunately, the attitude that they had in that group, at least at the time, was, you know, if it's not working, then you're not trying hard enough. Really, it's kind of the way it felt.
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, I can tell you in hindsight, I was probably working too hard at it. That there were some signs. You know, what was going on for me, but I think it probably should have been apparent that what really needed was pretty intensive mindset work. And that's ultimately what I got. I ultimately left that program. I had been in it for 2 years. The first year was very valuable. The second year, I think really they should have given me a referral 12 months before. And ultimately I went to work, study, the primary coach and mentor of the founder of that law practice management group. Okay, and he's, I think he's one of the best mindset coaches in the world. And that was a three-year journey. I still work with him. I still study under him. I'm in a group coaching program right now that is just phenomenal. And it's really what makes the biggest difference.
Yeah, you touched briefly on mindset, and I wanted to kind of expand on that a little bit. But I wanted to say also, you know, one of the things I tell my listeners and you know, clients in general is, you know, your greatest asset as a small business is your ability to pivot and not take, you know, if something's not working, to stop doing it, right? And if something is working, keep doing it. But, you know, there's that threshold between knowing when to keep doing it because it might work soon and stop doing it because it's not working. And that takes some wisdom that you just can't get in, you know, law school, business school, any type of educational environment, because they don't teach wisdom, right? They teach book smarts, which have value, certainly, but it doesn't teach you wisdom of knowing how to, you know, when to pivot, right? It teaches you, here are the facts, here are the details, here are the, you know, thoughts, process behind getting to that point, but then what do you do in order to pivot? So I wanted to talk a bit about mindset and how, you know, what mind shift switch, you know, it sounds like there was a little bit of this like aha moment. What was your aha moment in that, you know, mindset shift that you now teach to your business coaching clients at this point?
Well, at that moment, it was a very specific thing that can be important to understand, but it's not necessarily the starting point. It has to do with blind spots and fear. So the aha moment for me that really cut me loose and sent me on the new in the new direction that ended up being the right path was I ended up with a training. This was because I was on the email drip for my current mentor who I mentioned earlier.
Right.
And he sent out the email was about a blind spot training. And that really resonated with me because it's like, clearly, that's the issue.
Right.
There's something I'm not seeing. Right. And so that's kind of an important thing right there to recognize when there is clearly something you're not seeing and understand that that can be absolutely true.
Right.
So you might not have the solution yet, but that's the first step. And so that was it. And I said, yeah, blind spots is probably my issue. Let's get this training. It was a small investment. I don't remember how much, but you know, definitely something that required spending some money. And I did the training, and the step that was a key shift had to do with fear.
Right.
And I don't remember all the significant things that kind of helped me see what was happening, but I do remember him saying at some point during the training, something along the lines of, you know, fear usually points the way. Meaning the thing that you fear is so often pointing the direction that you actually need to go. Whereas, you know, our reaction tends to be fear. We want to run away. We want to stop. We want to hide. You know, right. We want to resist. And when he said that, for me, the thing that broke loose was I was in this, it was almost like a glide path, you know, like a sales glide path on the other end for that particular group, where when I had expressed interest in dropping from, you know, one level to a lower level, because I felt like, look, I'm not, for whatever reason, I'm not able to make use of all of the services that I'm currently paying for.
Right.
You know, I was like, I am getting great use of, you know, working with this one assigned coach. I am getting great use of the written materials. They had a database. And I have a lot on my plate that, you know, I feel like I still need to process. And maybe I just need to get caught up, you know, with these things. But I'm not able to make use of, they had these quarterly meetings that were expensive to travel to, and various other services. So that was the question, just can I drop down to that level? And that caused them to shift me into this sales process, really. That's what I mean, in hindsight, I can say.
Right.
That's what it was. And the moment that I heard that part about fear in the training with my current mentor, I realized that leaving that group is what I feared. And this is the sad part, that whether it was deliberate or not, essentially what they were doing was fear mongering.
Yeah.
And that's when I went, I gotta leave.
All
right. I'm out of here. And I didn't, I guess, humor any of that further. I basically said, nope, I have decided, I'm done. Tell me what I need to do to, you know, finish out here. In other words, here's my notice. Do you need anything else from me?
Right.
You know, and so forth. Because, you know, I don't want to burn bridges, but on the other hand, I'm not willing to continue this discussion. I'm not, and actually, the way that my current mentor would say it, I'm not available for this discussion any further.
Right.
And yeah. So that those two things were pivotal.
Fear is one of those things that just kills. What is it? Fear kills more dreams than any other factor than, and I can't remember the exact quote, so I'm totally messing that up. But I mean, fear is such a real tangible thing. You know, it's palpable. And anybody that hasn't, you know, gone into the breach of entrepreneurship or business ownership doesn't quite completely understand how fear can negatively affect them. They can have the most brilliant idea in the entire world. And I've seen brilliant ideas, and it's people's inability to execute that kills it. It isn't that the idea is bad. It's that they're afraid of the what ifs, right? The what ifs screw yes. people so badly. Even yeah. something as simple as like starting a podcast and a YouTube channel. We've never had technology like this in the history of the world, where we can reach so many millions of people so easily. And yet so many people choose not to do them. They choose that, oh, what if people don't like me? What if I'm not good on camera? What if I don't sound good on my, you know, my voice? And these limiting beliefs that people actually are inhibited by that, it really comes out to be that the unique that is us is what attracts others to us. And when we
yes.
say, when we fear putting that out there, in a previous episode, I talked about mental health and getting help, because it's so important as an entrepreneur to get help, but that was very personal. That was very difficult for me to share, because I when I shared that with people, you know, it's like, oh, I'm putting this out there on the internet for everyone in the world to see. But I realized that in order for people to connect with me, they need to see that I'm first a person and not yes. Not just a business entity, not just another attorney, that I've yes. had similar struggles, that I've had similar things that in my life, so that when I'm speaking, I'm not speaking from hypotheticals or case studies or, you know, my degrees. I'm speaking from real personal experience that says, you too can get to where I am. You can reach your goals. You can obtain what you're looking for. You have to go beyond the fear. You have to go beyond and say, you know what? I'm going to, you know, there's a media guy that his name's Sean Cannell. He says, you need to punch fear in the face, right? You just mm-hmm. have to go for it. Push record. The only way you get better at something is by doing it. There's no way to get better at something if you're not willing to push past that fear and say, you know what, it's more important that I reach my message, that I get my message out there to the hundreds, the thousands. I mean, just one person is worth the message, right? I mean, one person that yeah. can be more successful. You know, the statistics for small businesses are abysmal, because people have the wrong mindset. They don't. In fact, there was an article not too long ago that I read. The big difference between success and failure in business is one thing. It's the shift from thinking you're an employee to thinking you're a business owner. And, you know, when you start putting it in terms like that, shifting that mindset is absolutely crucial to people's success. But fear kills that shift, right? Fear says, I'm not good enough. So,
right. I'm not good
enough. Go ahead.
People judge me. So think about, you're talking earlier about, it was like opportunity and being able to, or at least this is what I was thinking about it. I'm sorry, I need to pause.
No, you're fine. I'll pause. All right. So tell me about how you can, as a business coach, you help your clients, your students overcome that fear.
Yeah, that's such a good question. And it doesn't have an easy answer like that. And here's why. It's not exactly about overcoming the fear. You know, people ask, how can I get rid of this fear? How can I get rid of this feeling? And it's not just fear. That's probably the most important one, but it's really any negative feeling, any feeling that makes you uncomfortable. And the answer really is about practices that create peace of mind, or at least help you find peace of mind, because it's actually always there and available to you.
Right.
When you learn how to, connect with it.
Right.
But you're not going to completely eliminate your other negative emotions. Instead, what you have to learn to do is push through them. Allow yourself to feel it, to recognize it, and then let go of it. Right. That's kind of a tricky thing.
It is. And I think, you know, an important part of that is we have to recognize fear for what it is. It's a response that we are physically ingrained with, right? We have the fight or flight response, and fear kicks in as a response to that. We can't fight, right? Or rather our ability to fight is limited, right? We fear something because we're not able in our minds, able to stand up to it. And so that fight or flight kicks in. And so our fear diminishes how we respond to that, because in a very real sense, back when, you know, we were hunters and gatherers and we needed to fight for our food. But there were some times that, you know, the biggest thing that we had to fight was too big. You know, if we're fighting a bear and we don't have the right tool to kill a bear, then realistically the idea that we need to run away from it. However, we have to recognize that type of, if, you know, problem doesn't exist anymore for most of the world. I mean, there are those out there, but we have better tools. And so when you're talking about when that fight or flight and that fear kick in, is that, you know, how can we get out of that fight or flight mode and fear, and we're going to run away from problems, into the rational part of our brain that says, okay, we have a problem. Let's work on a solution. Right. That's really right. What we're talking about, right? Moving into that solution oriented perspective rather than, oh, I can't deal with this.
Right. Well, and there are a lot of practices that help you learn to do that. And then the other key component for people that I think sometimes people miss, even when they get pretty good at this stuff, is taking action. I mean, you can sit down and study the books and engage in the practices and do the things that generally help us, I like to call it keeping my head on straight.
Right.
Right. But if you stop short of taking action on the things that you're fearful about, then you're actually not going to get where you need to go. And here's what I mean. Let's say your fear is coming in when it comes to what we were talking about, like say social media marketing, whether you're doing, and it doesn't just have to be social media. You could be a podcast, it could be making videos for Facebook, it could be anything, putting something to offer on LinkedIn. And, you know, you stop short, you're feeling fearful for whatever reason. Right. It doesn't matter how many of those practices you engage in, to keep your mind calm, to, you know, cultivate the peace of mind that you absolutely can. If you don't also sit down and come up with a plan for what is it that you want to create to offset the fear. In other words, the fear is about what I don't want, right? So the two-step here is first, recognizing that you're feeling the fear, acknowledging it and making it okay, right? It's okay that I feel this fear, but I'm also going to let go of it. I'm going to turn to the other side, which is courage, right? So, and this is actually the law of polarity. Fear, the opposite of fear is courage. They're going to be there and present at the same time. So you turn to the courage and ask yourself, what is it that I do want in my life? That's what you need to focus on. And that's what you need to come up with a plan for. And that's what you need to take action on.
Right.
I mean, this is obviously an oversimplification, but it's generally speaking, the answer.
Well, and I think, you know, part of it is giving people the beginning of a tool, right? You don't teach a baby how to, you know, chew on steak, right? You teach them how to deal with milk first, then you move into, you know, pureed foods. And then you move into, you know, once they get their teeth. And that's a lot of what we're talking about here when it comes to entrepreneurship is, you know, people don't know what they don't know. And that can be a big problem because unfortunately the internet is both a hindrance and a help because it only knows the answer to the question that you ask. It doesn't know the five questions down the road that are going to hurt you. And unfortunately, by the time you get down that part of the road, it might be too late, right? And turning back around and trying to figure it out at that point may be more harmful than it is worth it. And so part of entrepreneurship that I've seen that are successful are the people that, you know, take an honest stock of themselves and recognize that they don't know everything and that they're willing to learn and grow and overcome those things rather than it being, well, I know everything, or, you know, I'm a great, you know, and I see this where they're a great, say, I'm just using this, for instance, architect. And so they think that that'll translate into being a good architectural firm. The problem is, and this is true of attorneys, is they might be good attorneys, but they're terrible businessmen. The same thing goes for the architect.
Not the same skills.
Yeah, not the same skills, right? Lawyering does not translate into being a successful business owner. Before I became an attorney, I got my MBA, but before that, I did a lot of interviews with a lot of small businesses and asked them about their business and about what they wish they had. And the truth was they loved doing what they did, construction, you know, plumbing, they loved it. They didn't love the administrative side. They didn't love the business side of things. And so the idea being that, okay, so then you need to outsource that, right? Where's your money at anyway, right? A plumber gets paid when they're doing the plumbing, not when they're doing the business portion of it, especially if you don't like it. And so
yeah, that's an important thing to understand. And really, again, this is a phrase directly from my mentor. To be successful in business, you really have to get to a place ultimately where you fall in love with the business of whatever it is, the business of law in my case.
Right.
And if you're, and some people that's not an option for them. That's not something they're going to love.
Yeah.
In which case it's a decision. Am I going to be the lawyer? When you get to that place, is that going to be my priority?
Right.
I just love it so much. Well, then you need to start working on hiring people to help you with the business side.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, or are you going to do it the other direction? And, you know, for me, honestly, I love business.
Yeah.
So it was an obvious choice.
And I feel the same way that, you know, there's lots of good attorneys out there. And I try to be the best I can, obviously. I mean, I don't do anything halfway, but you know, I really find that I enjoy the business side of things more than I enjoy the lawyer side of things. And so my goal is to, you know, grow my firm to the point where I can just handle the business and I can bring someone in to do the legal side of stuff for me so that we can, you know, somebody that loves the legal stuff, I love the business stuff. Hey, it's a winning combination. And that's really what you need to focus on as a business owner is finding what you love to do. Do that and bring in the other people to do the stuff that you don't love to do so that everybody wins, right? It's a win-win situation. And that's a bit cliche. And I don't really like it often, but I mean, that's truly what becoming a real, you know, business owner, entrepreneur, growing person is, by focusing on what you do well and what you enjoy the most, and everybody can win in that respect. So.
Oh, I totally agree. And one of the things that allowed me to become successful with team building was when I actually threw out the rule book when it came to, I guess, traditional small law firms. That was, you know, round one of team building didn't work out well for me. But what did work out well is really embracing a concept that you're basically talking about, where when I sat down and said, okay, I have been back in the driver's seat here, handling everything, basically working, you know, two jobs, and I'm now ready once again to try and figure out how to make this work. And I've learned a lot from round one. And I know some of the things I want to make sure we don't repeat. So what I ask myself is simply, what is it that's the most destructive to my ability to run the business? You know, when it comes to being a trial lawyer, when it comes to, you know, criminal defense and domestic assault defense. And it was trial prep and being down at docket call for hours for cases that just end up getting dismissed anyway.
Right, right.
Now you have to do the trial prep.
Right.
You have to be ready to try that case. You don't get the great dismissals. You don't get the great offers. Yeah. But that was the thing that made it so excruciatingly difficult, because trial prep is so consuming.
Yeah.
And rather than, you know, hiring, going back to this concept or this model of, I'm going to hire a younger, less experienced attorney who's going to take over, you know, some of this work, take it off my plate.
Right.
Instead, I flipped that up and said, you know what? Let's find somebody who's better at trying than I am. Which you know, wasn't necessarily hard, because my superpower was getting dismissals. You know, I had a 97% dismissal rate over the course of a 6-year period, which meant, guess what? I wasn't trying cases a lot. And so what I did is I kind of thought to myself, well, who could I bring on board who's, you know, just an absolute fantastic trial attorney, is trying cases, is winning them, you know, cares about the outcome, cares about his or her clients, you know, and so forth. And there was one attorney in particular that came to mind. I had my eye on her because she had developed an expertise in a particular area of law that's relevant to domestic assault defense. And so I just thought, you know, I can't hurt. I touched base with the other members of my team. The person, for example, who was working as my she had been the mentor for my associate attorney. I had to lay my associate attorney off, but she was still my trial partner. So, you know, touching base with those people, what do you think about this attorney? You know, I mean, no telling if she's available, but she might be. And, you know, got generally speaking, positive feedback from my team, and said, okay. And so I just had a conversation with that person. And that beginning, that was really kind of the pivotal moment for the rest of my team development. Because that attorney did say yes. That attorney was very interested. And she is a badass. The person who is serving as my trial partner at this point, also a badass, very late in her career, you know, fantastic trial attorney, fantastic appellate attorney as well. But, you know, she's not that interested in being first chair trial attorney. So, you know, the two of them were kind of the beginning of my trial team. And it was the opposite of that model from before, where now they were super experienced. People who are really here,
right?
Who, you know, have established their expertise going forward like that. They really never wanted to do marketing and sales and, you know, focus on, you know, learning the ins and outs of really running a business properly. And so it was a really perfect, you know, mix when it came to that. And I ended up ultimately, and, you know, there are a lot of different things, you know, try this, try that, this works, that doesn't. I'd say mostly successes, definitely some failures along the way. And that's something we should circle back to, by the way, because a lot of people don't understand, you know, the place that failure has and that mistakes have when it comes to success, right?
Yep.
But ultimately, along that road, I got to a place where not only did I have a fully functional, very stable trial team, that meant, because I had enough attorneys on it, that I am no longer ever going to be the one who has to be prepping and trying these cases. You know, even if attorney A is not available, we have other people who can step in. And then once that model was working really smoothly and beautifully, I decided to try the same thing with our pretrial, function. So in other words, replacing myself slowly but surely by a team that was kind of modeled the same way. And then honestly, it became a thing of beauty because it really is also a brain trust. I was hiring attorneys who each one brought something special to the team. And we staff our cases together. We problem solve together. You know, we commiserate, which is something that a lot of times criminal defense attorneys don't have.
Yeah.
They're solos, largely. And so it's just been fantastic.
Sounds that way. And I think you talked on a very good thought process is having a partnership, which is what that sounds more like it is, without it necessarily being a partnership, right? Where your management is secondary, right? They're not causing more problems than they're worth. And that's right. Really something that you need to work on. You know, you want to bring people on that aren't just solving a problem. It's that they're solving a problem and not causing you more problems. I've found that a lot of entrepreneurs, they just bring on someone to solve a problem and then they forget the whole, oops, it solves a problem, but then if it causes you more headache and something else, then you're not really solving the problem. You're just reassigning, you're reorganizing the problem instead of solving it.
I think also jumping too quickly into a new hire is a really big mistake that people make. They're desperate. They feel, I've got to fill this position.
Yep.
I'm overwhelmed, what have you. And the phrase I've heard people use, which is not my own, but I like it, is, you know, the idea is to hire slow and, you know, fire or lay off fast.
Yeah.
I mean, it's true. You are much better off trying to deal with the pain of having too much work to do.
Right.
And ending up with someone who's not really a good fit.
And I was actually about to say the exact same thing. It really is hiring slow and firing fast is one of the key things. Yeah, you'll learn it hard once and then never again. I tried bringing on an intern a couple of times and they don't have the joie de vivre, if you will, right? I mean, they just, I gave them assignments to do, and I'm not a micromanager, right? I do not believe in micromanaging. If I have to micromanage you, then I'm doing the work twice, right? And to me, that's just a big waste of effort and time and money and all other stuff. And so I will give an assignment. I will give direction for that assignment, absolutely. But when they would come back and not do it at all, and it was like, okay, well, then what the heck's the point? I mean, I'm offering to pay you money to do something, and you chose to not do it. I mean, and I totally get that, you know, you're busy, life happens, but, you know, if you can't do this simple assignment, we're talking just basic level, how can I trust you to do something more difficult? How can I trust you to do something, solve a real problem other than just a time problem, right? I mean, like time is one problem, but there is a myriad of other problems that people forget about. You fire, you know, hire slow, make sure it's a good fit, make sure that they have a good personality, that they want to be a part of the culture and not just, a 9-to-5 stick it, you know, put the punch in the clock and punch out. And I'm not saying you necessarily have to work out, but the attitude that goes with, I don't want to be a part of this company other than a job, like from a personality perspective, not necessarily, you know, when I go home, I want to spend time with my family. I totally get that. That isn't what my issue is. It's when it's the attitude of, well, that's not my job. Well, you know what? I'm paying you to do this work, whether it's your job or not. Right. I mean, like there's always those exceptions where we just need people to do it. Right. There's no perfect position where you're confined to this little box and nothing ever comes in that box that doesn't belong. And you're, you know, and so you need people that are willing to be flexible and able to move with the job, and not be confined to this limited mindset. And that's really what it is, right? It's limiting mindset that says, I'm only as good as my 9 to 5, my mind 9 to 5 mindset. I'm not willing to take a step out and be better than my 9 to 5 mindset.
Yeah, there's, I mean, there can be a few things. Sometimes it's just the person. I think sometimes it might be the culture. You know, one thing that's really important to do, that I was thinking of, you're talking about a new hire, especially somebody who hasn't really earned your trust yet, is to make sure that you're delegating, but not abdicating. And I think that can be a really tough thing for a lot of people, attorneys definitely, and probably other professionals, to distinguish between, right? You know, just handing it off to somebody and not touching base, not having some accountability, some milestones, some points at which, you know, they're going to have to kind of give you an update, let you know where they are on it, I think is a mistake until somebody has really earned your trust.
Yeah. And that is so very true. I mean, you know, trust, but verify. I know that's a common phrase, and I think that's, it's very important that you give them the amount of trust that they've earned. And that isn't to say that you mistrust people, but that, you know, to give them too much trust when they've done nothing other than, you know, given a good interview and a resume, you know, that you're just opening yourself up to somebody to take advantage of that or abuse it, one of the two. And I think that's so important that you make sure that you're building that relationship. I mean, it's not dissimilar to being in a relationship in a, you know, dating situation where you're, you know, you go out on a single date, you're not hoping for much after that, right? And I mean, unless it goes really well. And that's kind of how you have to do the perception of hiring is, okay, they have a decent resume, they've met these qualifications that I put out there. Okay, cool. Now they're met the interview. Okay, cool. Now they've done this. Now they've moved on to, you know, the background. So there's nothing glaring, right? There's nothing that's out there that says, okay, this is definitely a bad idea. Then you move into the category of, okay, now are they a good fit, right? And that's the next step is, and then that's where after you've hired them that says, you know, I'm, you know, even doing things like performance. One time before I was an attorney, I tried doing like a graphic design firm, and I sent out, this was, oh my gosh, I can't even remember how many years ago, it's been a long time, but anyway, I reached out to the local graphic design schools, and I narrowed the resume of the people down to like three, and I wanted them to do a job for me, that would be representative of their skill, that was not a pre-made something, right, that they'd spent 50 hours on. I wanted it to be something where it was more like a job, where I have a deadline, I need you to do this, can you help me? And the funniest thing was none of them performed. And I was like, this is what I need you to do for this job. I need to know that you can, you know, give, you can work with clients, that you can give into their demands and, or not give in, but you know what I mean? Like handle the demand here. And it was just so, it blew me away. I was like, I'm looking to hire you. And at this time, graphic designers were like, you know, they were in not very high demand, and there was a lot of them. So how can you turn off? And it eventually it just went away. I mean, I followed up, and I'd even selected one that had the strongest whatever, and she just stopped contacting me, and it just blew my mind. I'm like, how do you, you know, I had a construction guy years ago, and a friend of mine who was in construction, and was doing really well. And this was during one of the housing crises when money was just super duper tight. And I said, well, what's your secret to success? And I'm not kidding you. His whole thing was, I show up. So many of the contractors would just go rather have a beer than show up to do the work. Right. And so he would come by, he would get called, he would show up, he wouldn't show up intoxicated, he'd get the job done, he didn't give them problems, he showed up, right? Mentally and physically, he showed up. so much of success in this world is more about showing up than it is being amazing at it. I teach business law, and I can't tell you how true that is in my business law classes. People just don't show up. You know, they don't do assignments. They don't care. And, you know, I'm not saying that's a blanket, all of them, but, you know, the issue is that, you know, if you want to get ahead in life, you got to show up. You can't hope that it's just going to fall on your lap, the $1 million that you want. You got to work for it.
Well, you know, this issue that you're describing having here reminds me of the hiring experience I had with, there was a process with the law practice management group that they taught me for hiring, which was I think a good process. And, you know, this is the process for, I should say specifically when you're hiring people that you haven't met. These are not people that you know. And so the first couple, I mean, I had a couple people working with me, I guess, that weren't already before I engaged the process. Right. So these are more organic hires.
Right.
But these two particular hires that I confirmed at the same time, but within a 2-year period. And it was set up almost a little bit like a, what's it called? Not a treasure hunt, but, you know, a quest where, you know, and it's not, I mean, not super difficult or tricky, or it shouldn't be for somebody who has a college degree. And, you know, where you ask them to do something like just, you know, create a simple letter.
Right.
With, you know, I want you to have one paragraph should have like bullet points. And then, you know, various other small things that they have to, and say at the beginning of your posting, make sure you really follow all the instructions in this job. And so you're face, you're laughing, you can always see where this goes.
Oh yeah.
But you know, I did that. I took the process that was given to me by the law practice management. I, you know, adjusted it for my area of practice, for my locality, and so forth. And I actually, this is what's really funny about the results, is that I made it a little simpler because I felt like it was just a little too involved.
Right.
And I mean, I wanted to definitely have competency, but I didn't want to make people spend 3 hours on the thing.
Yeah.
You know, so I did that. I set it up. I had, at the time, I was working with a virtual assistant. I mean, a local person who wasn't always, you know, with me.
Right.
And she, you know, I told her, this is how I want to do it. And, you know, follow these instructions. And she got a huge, like, wave of applications. And we had actually posted on Craigslist in addition to, you know, whatever other sources. And we got the most response on Craigslist. And I was so shocked. And so was she at the quality or lack thereof of so many of the applicants. You know, these are grown-ups, some of whom have college degrees, and, you know, they couldn't be bothered to follow the instructions. Some of them, you know, the typos, the misspellings, et cetera, in their letters. You know, there are a couple little things we asked them to find, and it's something like, for domestic assault defense, we have this class called the Batterers Intervention Prevention Program that a lot of people have to take when they're either, they have a pending case, and it's a bond condition, or maybe they're entering into some kind of plea agreement or a dismissal agreement, and that's a condition. And so it's something that's very common in Texas, and I had done the search in advance, and I used the exact term from the Google search that I, you know, used when I was setting up this, this, you know, job, you know, posting, and, you know, used those words in the question. All they have to do is type it into Google. It's going to be like the first or second thing. We're telling them exactly what they're looking for. Follow the link, go to the webpage, get this information for us.
Right.
I mean, so I've seen things like that. And we had so few applicants that actually did it that, you know, my assistant wanted to, you know, was actually kind of inclined to bring people in and didn't. I'm like, absolutely not.
Oh, no.
I mean, uh-huh. A, I'm following the process, you know, that at the time the coaches that I'm working with are telling me, you need to do this. I'm not going to pay these people all this money and not follow their advice.
Right.
That's A. B, of course I could see the wisdom of that. If you cannot follow these basic instructions, then what the hell are you going to do when we have a real problem in the law firm?
Exactly.
and then,
yeah.
I also had to tell her, by the way, to stop telling me about anything about the ones who don't meet the criteria.
Right.
Because there were some people who were so offended at being tested that they actually responded with like garbage, negative kind of stuff. And so the assistant was kind of inclined to go, this. And I'm like, I don't want to. Just stop. I have zero interest, negative interest. And the people who, what do I care what they think about our job posting?
Right.
You know,
they're not qualified
or interested anyway.
And I once upon a time, many, many, many years ago, I was an administrative assistant. And so they would make us take these tests, which I had no problem with. But what was funny was that they were so locked into doing it the way that they wanted you to do it, that if you knew how to do it a different way, that they would error you out. And so you literally had to follow the exact way that they wanted you to do it, even though I could get the same result by doing it a different way. And so I understand you want it to be done, but the idea that I can do it faster, better, or otherwise, and you're telling me that you want me to do it slower and stupider, really, that's when I got offended at taking tests. It wasn't the test itself. It was the idea that I could do it better and faster, a different way. And now you're telling me
an important thing too for business owners that I think there are a lot of people who make this mistake. And that is, yes, you may have a procedure that works. You may have a way of doing it that works. And you're going to teach your people, this is how we do it. But really, I think to be successful in business, you have to be able to be more flexible than that. And you have to be able to see when people are coming up with solutions that actually are better than the way that it's currently done.
Exactly.
And not only accept that, but embrace it, reward it.
Be humble enough to recognize you don't know it all. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, absolutely.
Innovate. Oh my gosh, please. Absolutely. I love innovate.
You want to encourage that. In fact, those are the people that you're looking for, really. You're looking for the people who are self-starters, who think outside the box, who are going to actually improve your process.
Right.
Those are the ones. But, it's interesting to me in hindsight, my best hires always have been ones that have come to me more organically.
Yeah.
And it's generally the way that it works is that I decide what it is that I need, what need I have to fill. And I kind of get a general idea of what I think that looks like, what kind of individual, what kind of skills, I'm on the lookout for. And I often will also tell my team, touch base with them, say, hey, listen, we've been having this need and that need. I think we need to hire somebody. Right. And this is what I think we're looking for. Do you know anybody that I should talk to?
Yeah.
And I'll, of course, touch base with friends, people in my network as well. And it seems like, and this is, by the way, mindset stuff.
Sure.
This is how my hiring process has been improved by the extensive amounts of mindset work that I've done. So basically, usually within a time frame, once I've made that decision and started that process of looking, not exactly passively, but in a more organic fashion, it is super common for somebody to actually fall into my lap who is not only perfect, but maybe even better than I could have possibly imagined.
That's so important. And recognizing that people can come from all sorts of different backgrounds and or places, not just sticking with the, okay, this is a box in which I want my employee to be, when they could be perfectly capable and competent from a different box, right? Or from a different area, that there are a lot of skills and ideas that are transferable from one area to another, and that to not just shun people because of the lack of exactness, right? I mean, sure, you want to have people that have a basic guide and an understanding of who they are, but why inhibit yourself? So some of the best employees that you could come from somewhere that you weren't expecting. And by limiting yourself, you're hurting your potential for growth because you're so limited in your mindset. And that's big.
Yeah,
this has been truly great. We need to move on to a couple of more topics. I just wanted for our listeners to get to hear more about you. So tell me, what is your most unusual talent?
Okay. I don't know if this is unusual in the general population, but as an attorney, it tends to be somewhat unexpected. for people, and that is, I don't have any formal training, but I have a natural aptitude and passion for interior design.
All right. That's good. That's good. I mean, wouldn't it be boring if we were all the same and had the same tendencies or talents? It would just be so boring. Life would be so boring.
Totally.
Let's see. If you could only eat one food for the rest of your life, what would it be?
So I can't pick one. I have two. And it is mangoes. And on the other side is Brussels sprouts, roasted with balsamic and parmesan.
Okay.
And what's interesting about both of those choices is that as a child, I had an allergy to mangoes. And I absolutely hated Brussels sprouts.
That's why, hey, you turned it something that you liked.
Yeah, well, the mangoes, I just extinguished it. My mom took me back to Trinidad when I was a kid. And we lived there for a couple of years, where she's from. And I just gorged myself on mangoes. Wow. Different varieties of mangoes, you know, at every opportunity. And it just, the allergy went away eventually.
Wow, that's amazing.
And then Brussels sprouts, it's just a change in cuisine. The way that they're cooked these days does not resemble the way they were when I was a kid.
All right, so last fun question. What is the funniest, weirdest text you've ever received or phone call?
Okay. Yeah, it was a message, a text message in WhatsApp, which is what we use, my husband and I use with our kids and close family. And it was my older son, who's 14, was babysitting his 8-year-old brother. And he's often bitter about us babying, you know, our younger son. His name is Felix. Yeah. He's like, he's not a baby anymore, Mom. And in this particular instance, I think it was a little less than a year ago, but yeah, we had started the process of teaching Felix how to cook things, or at least heat them up, you know, in the microwave. And I don't remember which food it was, but my older son had refused to, and with our permission, he had refused to cook something for Felix directly. Instead, he supervised him.
Oh my.
And to prove to us that Felix could actually do it, he made a video and then texted it to us.
Oh my.
So we were, you know, yeah, we were off on, I think it was like date night or something. And
sure.
You know, looking at this and laughing, because I mean, it was just funny, the dynamics between the two of them, and Felix was so bitter about it.
So this has been really great, and I was so glad that you agreed to come on the podcast, because I really
thank
feel
you so
like
much for inviting me.
The more people that can hear from other people, you know, that, you know, we all, was it high tides raise all boats, and that, you know, they need to hear it from different people, because sometimes they may resonate with you in a way they may not resonate with me. So, that just brings me to my last question. If people want to get a hold of you for your business coaching or your law practice, how did they do that?
Best way, probably on LinkedIn.
Okay.
That's going to be so it's just my first name.
Okay.
You know, the LinkedIn URL, and it's, right, you know, Kiele.
Okay.
So, at Kiele. Also, I do have a public profile on Facebook that is a pretty good way also. And that's Austin Kiele, which is, some people, when they see that, they think Austin is my first name, but no, it's just, I live in Austin, I'm from Austin.
Gotcha.
And so it's the Austin Kiele, as opposed to Kiele Sanchez, the actress. She's got quite a bit of, you know, stuff out there online. Once upon a time, I was the only Kiele that you find, you know, online when you do a search. No longer true. So I'm the Austin Kiele. And that's pretty much my handle on most social media, you know, at Austin Kiele.
Very good. Very good. Well, I hope that my listeners, if they need you, will reach out. Let's see. All right. So thank you for tuning in to the Tactical Startup Podcast. If you reach out, please make sure that you mention that you heard on this podcast so she knows where you're coming from. I hope you have a great week, and we'll talk to you next time.